Elle répond non. Elle répond. Elle répond. Allô? Moi, quand je suis venu en André. Ah, il y a quand même quelque chose de waffle qui est en train de se faire. Qu'est-ce que c'est? Elle répond? Allô? Non, je ne sais pas. Ok, là, elle répond. Ok, dans votre série, dit André comme avec une minute de scène. So, I will not spend so much time. This is meant more as a review. So, and as an example of a thing that is increasingly combined with interest in information security, because the issue of management difficult crisis has a lot of common aspects, no matter if it is a natural catastrophe or man-made in information security. So I will tell you a bit about what happened in 2005 and why this case is interesting. I'm going to skip some of the slides because they are a bit theoretical, so sticking to the most important things. But then you get also a review of the system dynamics modeling procedure, problem definition, the reference behavior, and how we build the model, how we verify, validate, and what you learn from that. So the Hotlet Start slide hit a suburb, a neighborhood in Bergen in 2005, September 14. There was extreme weather, extreme precipitation, raining for weeks, breaking all records for Bergen, and Bergen is famous for its rain. And then there was a slide down a hill. It was mainly clay, some mud, some rock. And they destroyed a row of houses. 10 people were buried. 6 could be rescued. 4 died. 225 people had to be evacuated. And the rescue operation started a few minutes after the catastrophe for about 10 hours until noon. The event had a big impact in Norway. It changed the Norwegian policies for housing construction on hills. It led to mapping, to finding out about housing potentially at risk from slides. It changed the preparedness towards extreme weather. And the catastrophe was very well studied at the university by teams at the University of Bergen. So there were lessons learned for emergency management. Especially there was the study done by Peter Lango. He wrote a master thesis in 2010 and a book chapter in a very interesting book about emergency cases in Norway in 2011. The Hotlet Start case is similar in behavior towards the Palau case that was studied by Hutchins in publishing his book Cognition in the Wild. And a group of Chinese scientists developed a model for the Palau case. And it is based on theory that when there is a disaster or emergency, it creates a lot of disorder. It demands improvisation to deal with the disorder. And in the end, a process of self-organization arises so that the crisis team are able to come through from the disorder to a well-ordered system. According to Hutchins, we are borrowing now from the Palau disaster. The key variables that describe the managing of a disaster are the cognitive load, the improvisation, which he called local innovation and changes, and the degree of mutual understanding in the teams. They are soft variables, but again, if they are important, you have to consider them so as to get a description of the situation. This is a bit theoretical, but very briefly, using system dynamics, you can develop theories. And the theory that was used to model the Palau case is called the complexity theory. We are looking more at the middle range theory, and that was a name given by Merton in his book in 1968. The references are at the back of the slides, the last slide. So a theory between the working hypothesis for practitioners and a unified theory that will explain the phenomena. There is a very interesting paper by Schwanninger and Grosser. They applied criteria to describe what is a high-quality theory, and they concluded that system dynamics enables the construction of high-quality theories. So what you want to do is to develop a simulation that is well verified and validated. That's what we mean, but for the right reasons, should be able to reproduce the observed reference behavior of the Hartlestadt slide emergency management. So here are the right reasons. The model structure should contain the variables corresponding to the observed behavior of the emergency management team. That's what we mean by verifying the model. The observables should be linked in the model according to a simple dynamic hypothesis. And the simulation should reproduce the reference behavior, and the model should pass extreme testing, other tests that a good model should be able to pass. So, from the published literature describing what happened, we have these three curves for the cognitive load, that is the strengths, so to speak, the stress on the team. So if you look at it, to begin with, they are not stressed, but when they enter the scenario and they face the catastrophe, the cognitive load, here it is, the number one. Cognitive load increases, they are more stressed, and as they are able to self-organize themselves and cope with the situation, the stress decreases, or the cognitive load decreases. The red curve shows how much improvisation they need. To begin with, when they arrive, they just view the situation, then they have to improvise, since no disaster is run after scripts. And you see that the red curve peaks after they have a while, they're able to work more in a normal situation. And the mutual understanding, the green curve, shows that after a while there is confusion, so the mutual understanding in the team decreases, but then as they are able to reorganize themselves, the mutual organizing increases again. The data is not very good, but we do know when the different curves start to change. We do know the maximum and minima approximately, at least when they happen. And we know when they return to normal times, to normal situation. So, to describe this, we assume that we could use a disequilibrium experimenting emergency process, which is well described in the literature. So we must have a model that is able to generate this equilibrium, experimenting, innovation and changes, and the emergence of health organization. The literature, as back as in 1976, has shown that when there are disasters, the organizations that best deal with disasters are emergency organizations. An emerging organization can be described by looking at the way that, by two parameters, the kind of tasks that the team will deal with, regular tasks, non-regular tasks, and the structure of the team, the old or new. So consider regular tasks using the established old structure. We call this established. For example, the police is doing what they did before the disaster in the same way. If we combine non-regular tasks with the old structure, we call this, Dying Quarantelli called that extending organization. So it's a group undertaking non-regular tasks, like a construction company, which is using their staff and their equipment to dig through the debris during a rescue operation. Then you have the combination of regular tasks with a new structure. They call it expanding organization. As an example, a group exists on paper only until the disaster happens, like the Red Cross running a shelter. And finally, you have the emerging organization. The emerging organization is characterized by dealing with non-regular tasks in a new structure that is self-organized. Like a new group made up of people from many different organizations or organizational units suddenly working together to tackle the crisis problems. And that's typically what happens in big disasters. The tasks are non-regular, they never did it in the same way because disasters do not follow scripts. And they are typically teams who never have worked together that have to cooperate. So the system dynamics model is quite advanced, as you can see. These are BERT views of that. In order to see the whole model, I had to make them very small. You see some stocks everywhere, here, there, 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 and so on, and connections. And the model is split in three parts that are connected. One dealing with the responders, one dealing with the governance, one dealing with the cognitive load. This is a simplified view as a causal loop diagram. And as you can see, there are a lot of feedback loops, like local innovation, which means improvisation, performance adjustment, team learning, error detection and discovery, and so on and so on. So we created the simulation model, and we run through a verification, checking that the variables and the causal connections represent the selected case. A validation, checking that the model is able to simulate the reference behavior. Checking that the model simulates extreme conditions. And then we did a sensitivity analysis. What happens if you vary the variables obtained by calibration? And here you can see that our model, the blue line, is quite able to reproduce the cognitive load. It's quite able to reproduce the local innovation and changes. It's quite able to simulate a mutual understanding. And then we look at the feedback, so that is, we eliminated systematically the feedback loops to see what influence they have. The way to break a feedback loop is simply to put in between a loop a zero causal influence, then that feedback loop is eliminated. By doing this systematically, we could show that in the beginning, it is the loop called performance adjustment that is making the strongest impact. So it is this loop here. So the stuff comes into the area of the disaster, and the first thing they have to do is to adjust the work effort so as to be able to deal with the attacks. As you can see, the cognitive load, the stress, influences the potential work rate. So it is here. Then, after a while, there is a reinforcing loop, which is a vicious loop. I'm going to show it in a moment. Cognitive load and errors increase, and the actor they force to improvise, but at the cost of decreasing the mutual understanding. If you have a team and the people are doing different things because they have to improvise, then there is a decrease in mutual understanding. So this loop is this one that goes like this. It is a reinforcing loop, and because the cognitive load increases and the cognitive load increases, then it generates errors, and these errors diminish the actual work rate, increase the performance gap. So this reinforcing loop is now acting in a vicious manner. Then, after a while, another reinforcing loop is dominating, and it is driving the mutual understanding even further down. And this is this loop here, with the thick slides. Where the first kind of errors were errors because of misunderstanding, the next one, because of stress, they are making more and more errors. This loop comes from mismatch. The mutual understanding is low, and that's forcing errors. And then, after a while, the teams are learning, the improvisations are becoming better and better, the number of errors decrease, the mutual understanding increases. So, if you look at the whole model, it is the interplay of all these feedback loops, and you can see at different periods of time there are different feedback loops that are strongest. So what did we learn from that? First of all, you can consider this model as a simple theory of how you would describe the transition from disorganization in a crisis or a disaster to self-organization. It is a first cut. The Palau case that I referred to originally was a case that was much simpler, even if it has similarities with the slide, because in the Palau case what happened was that a vessel from the US Navy lost power while it was sailing into the bay area in San Francisco, and then the team was able to navigate the vessel without support from the electronic equipment by just making observation, looking at the mast, where are we, how do we have to steer. So it was not a real disaster, it was a minor emergency. Our model extending that, we found similarities because it was a transition from disorganization to self-organization. But in the difference, the main difference was in the case of the disaster, we have a more complex interplay of teams. It was the police, it was the firefighters, it was the paramedics, and so on. So the challenges would be now to test this theory with new cases. The problems is that very often disasters are not well documented. The staff comes, the Red Cross, the paramedics, the firefighters, and so on, they do their work. The reports they write, they are not ideal for scientific studies. And the staff has normally not the time to do more, or perhaps they lack the training to provide the data. So we have to improve how to get data about disasters of all kinds. Then we will be able to create better simulation models. So there is a bottleneck getting the data from practitioners and also improving the methodology to get data. So if you are interested in this, read the paper that I have posted, and there are a number of references. The study by Dines and Quarantelli that I mentioned, where they studied several hundred disasters, and they look at communication and decision-making in crisis. Even if it's back in 1976, still it's a very good study. Then, that's the paper. It says submitted to ISCRM. It was actually published in ISCRM. The book by Catchings, Condition in the Wild. The article by McIntosh and Mike Lim on transition from disequilibrium to equilibrium, or from disorganization to self-organization. The book by Merton is about theories, so also the Schwani and Gressel. And there is a system dynamics study that modeled the Palau case, and that was published a few years ago. Actually, we have now improved the Hartlestadt model. We got better data from the practitioners, have improved the model and simplified it, and we have submitted it to a conference. So perhaps in a couple of weeks, we could replace this by a nicer model and a better study. But at the moment, since we don't know if the paper is accepted, I cannot share it with you. So that was the last post today. And as I said, you find the slides and the article in the webpage. So this is the article that was published in ISCRM. And there are many more details there if you are interested. Okay, so that finished me for today. Questions? You there, Buck. Do you have questions? Submit questions and use the question and answers part of Frontier. So don't forget to front page, question and answers. Who is the first who puts a question here? Okay? Okay, thank you very much. The next time, that will be 22nd of April, 3 weeks from now. But don't forget the project next week. Okay? So your question is about the kind of project that you can expect? The multiple choice. Well, it's about preparing. Normally, yes, follow these the slides and so on. But again, to be best prepared for a multiple choice exam, you should practice. If you use the slides, use the stuff that you got, then you will have a better relation to the questions that can be asked. There will be basic questions that ask about your understanding of basic issues. But to understand, remember, reading is not enough. You have to use it in some way. you can talk to each other. So you can say, Chetan, please explain me this. How do you see that? And the other way around, Kushbir, and so on. And communicate with each other, challenge each other. My understanding is like this. Simply discuss things. That's a way of practicing. And similarly, Steiner, you can find with other people, use the question and answers. Just posing questions is also a way of using what you learned. So just the effort to formulate a question forces you to use the terms that you have seen. And very often in the process of trying to ask a question and putting it clearly, you have yourself to think through. So that's one way of using that. Then do Venzi models. At a minimum, looking at them, reproducing them, even better, looking at them, trying to make them separately without seeing the Ricci model, going back when you are lost. Then you will see, where are my difficulties? Okay, that's the problem. Because otherwise, if you are just copying, you don't see where the difficulties are. In the difficulties, that's where you need to improve your understanding. Okay? Fine, then good luck.